Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
You're disappointed he's not going with you on this trip, aren't you?
Well, he has other things he'd rather be doing. Friends he'd rather be with. It's funny. A year or two ago, nothing would have stopped him from coming with me on an adventure like this. I guess I waited too long.
You'll have other adventures, Benjamin. They'll just be different. Believe me, I know. I've been a father a couple of times myself. Oh, I could tell you stories.
You already have.
That's right, I have, haven't I? Then you know I'm right.
So, I have pushed the timer button so the timer is going.
Neat.
I have clicked on the record button.
Wow.
And I've been very careful just now not to click on it again to stop recording by accident.
Oh, no, don't do that on accident.
Well, because I'm gesturing towards the recording button.
Gesturing.
Yeah. So, the recording has started. So, we may, if you wish, we may start the podcast.
What if I don't want to?
Then we needn't. We can start the podcast or not start the podcast, as per your pleasure, sir.
What do you want to do instead?
Well, I mean, I really would be rather keen on starting the podcast.
Do you want to build a mini golf course in your throughout your house? Wouldn't that be cool?
It would be cool. I mean, are you volunteering to help or are you just tossing the idea
out
there?
I'm just throwing it out there. Like, you'd have to make, and for the stairs, you'd have to, like, putt the ball up the stairs and stuff, you know?
Putting the ball up the stairs, that sounds like a... sort of a philosophical
some kind of Sisyphean?
Yes.
Sisyphean?
Sisyphean.
Butt Sputnik.
Hey, that's from before we started the podcast. Don't let the pre-podcast stuff leak into the actual podcast.
It'd confuse people.
All right. So, hello. This is Patrick. Sorry. This is Patrick. I don't normally say that. Mm-hmm. Normally, I don't make a big deal about my name. That's Dan over there. Hey, Dan.
Hey, Jacob.
Jake isn't here. Nor is Jesse. Jesse is out again. He continues to be on paternity leave. We were hoping to have him here this week on the podcast, which we'll mention the name of the podcast momentarily. But he did recently help usher into the new world into the world, a new human life.
Oh, this human is full of worms.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. But he couldn't make it tonight because his infant daughter ran up to him and gave him a swift kick in the balls. She just, you know, that'll happen from time to time, especially with the second child. They're a lot more feisty.
Yeah. You took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to say she sounds feisty, and you said it.
Yeah.
Now I can't say it.
No.
I mean, I could, but it's, the point?
You sort of did.
Yeah.
Okay.
But in reference to it, not like... Anyway,
well, if anybody's confused as to why Jesse's not here and why, as what? A result, Dan and I are not on our best
You gave
behavior.
A beat between that. You said, why Jesse's not here? Why Jesse's not here? Why Jesse's not here?
Did I make this mouth sound or are you adding that in as an illustration?
Why Jesse's not here? Why Jesse's not here? Why Jesse's not here? He is not here now.
You should have let me put some like echo on that or something.
Oh, well, you should have done that.
Yeah, well, can't do it now. No way to do that now.
Right.
Okay.
I feel like you asked me a question before and I didn't answer it.
I don't have a recollection of it.
Yeah.
It's not. All right. Well, though Jesse's not here, but that's okay. Dan and I will hold down the fort. And tonight on, what's the name of the podcast, Dan?
The It's Got Star Trek podcast.
All right. Very awkwardly stated. Yes. Welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Welcome aboard, sir.
I believe... If I got my numbers correct, I believe we are on episode 273.
Yes.
Of the It's Got Star Trek podcast. So we welcome you to that.
Hey! Hey, Tickle. Hey!
And, yes.
Hi. Hello.
Hello. And this week, Dan and I, on episode 273 of the It's Got Star Trek podcast, Dan and I will be discussing the Deep Space Nine season 3 episode, Explorers.
That seems hard to believe.
It ought not be, because that's what we do each and every week on this podcast, is discuss an entry into the filmed Star Trek lore.
It's the only explanation.
So, yes, as you can tell from this cacophony of sound
cacophony?
Clips. Cacophony. Yes, you're right. Cacophony. That's an example of one where when you read it, I remember, mm-hmm. you know, reading it cacophony and then hearing it cacophony and then saying cacophony as a joke. But then the problem is it supersedes the correct pronunciation in my mind because I joked about it too much. Just like with Penelope instead of Penelope.
Good point. Good point.
Penelope? Whoever said Penelope? Well, did you say Penelope?
Well, when you read it, it looks like Penelope.
It does look like
but
Penelope.
But when you hear it pronounced, it's Penelope.
All right.
Don't even get me started on Genevieve.
Some kid I remember made fun of me once because we were like, I don't know, young in early elementary school or something. And he went to some smart school or something. And he was like, he was dissing on some kid he knew. He was like, he doesn't even know what 3 cubed is. And I was like, oh, wow. Okay. And he's like, do you know what 3 cubed is? And I was like, no, because nobody taught me what cubed meant.
But you know what 3 cubed is now.
And back then I would have known what it is had they taught me the word cubed. They didn't. That's
you knew
the problem.
3 to the 3rd.
Yes.
But you didn't know
cubed.
I
didn't know cubed. I never heard it.
Was this Bronco by any chance? No. Was this kid Bronco?
No, it was not Bronco.
Your childhood bully?
No, Bronco was not my childhood bully.
Your childhood abuser.
No, but the point I'm saying is this same kid used to pronounce the word Leviathan, Leviathan.
Oh, and sort of like Wingardium Leviosa.
And so I'm just thinking like glass houses, man, you know, just like
glass half empty, half full.
No, it's glass houses because he was getting a
glass slipper in Cinderella.
No, it was glass houses because he was implicitly shitting on my shit because I didn't know what cubed is. But here he is walking around.
He was shitting in a glass house.
Talking about Leviathan. What gives him the right to criticize me? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Okay. So I inadvertently got us on that tangent there when I said
yes,
cacophony instead of cacophony.
That's right.
And what I was trying to get at is, as the audience, who some are presumably still listening, when they hear all of your collection of sound effects, or sound clips, I should say, from this episode, they can tell that we've got a lot to discuss, yet we're wasting so much time at the beginning of the episode. Because we've got...
It is beautiful, isn't it?
Bashir, and Leeta, and the Doctor, and the ships, and the Cardassians, and...
I'm Leeta.
Drunk O'Brien, and all manner of things to get to, so we should start getting to them. But before
that, forget, is from the heart.
Yeah, I know the
I'll play it one more time.
Right. That is from the heart.
You can hear him swaying as he's saying that. Yeah.
This is all fantastic.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. This is a fun episode.
This is a really good episode.
It's a sweet episode.
I think it's nearly perfect.
Yeah, I agree. It's wonderful Star Trek.
Yeah.
I've always loved Explorers. It's weird. It's one of my low-key favorites because I don't ever think about it when I think of... thinking of favorite episodes of Star Trek, favorite episodes of Deep Space Nine. This does not usually... sort of enter into that mental conversation, but it ought to. It's just such a nice package of character-driven storytelling.
And how they sort of weave into this idea of like, you know, Sisko is inviting Jake to take this experience, and we don't know exactly why Jake didn't do it. I mean, he wanted to see his girlfriend, but I mean, maybe he's...
At least at first, it's a teen boy.
Right, and so...
And we'll get to that, too. There's a lot of winking and nudges and sexual references
and
here.
We don't know exactly why he actually decided to go on the trip. I guess he wanted to tell his dad, maybe. Or maybe, I didn't know if he felt guilty or if he just wanted to tell his dad.
Well, I think that's ultimately why he went on the trip.
And I liked how they sort of tied in this idea of like... He's a writer.
Yeah.
Sisko's like, he says he likes the story, but he's like, you know, you really should write about stuff you know.
Write about what
and
you
which,
know. Yeah.
And that sort of like kind of like introduces the theme sort of halfway into it. It's like, oh, Jake should write about what he knows. It's a good thing he went on this trip because it gives him stuff to write about. And then at the end, Jake throws it back at him, which I don't know. I don't know if it was a great argument he had, but the point was he sort of threw it back at him saying like, well, you want me to have experience? Deep Space Nine has a lot of experience, which sounds like an excuse, but we know from the way it's presented, it's meant to be like, he's actually, It's funny, his dad wants him to go right away, but the fact that he's staying means he learned from his dad. Yeah. You know, it's kind of, I don't know, they wove all those ideas in, and just like how the school plot came into play, we didn't know what it was at first. First he got some, he hid some pad, and then he saw the computer and was smiling. I thought he was smiling because it was a letter from his girlfriend, but
he was looking at porn.
But it was,
that's what Cisco thought. Cisco was like, oh, that's why you're hiding that pad. Cisco just thought Jake was looking at pornography and was smiling that wry Jake smile.
Excuse me.
And so when he looks at the information, he gets, it says you have a message from New Zealand or whatever. Mm-hmm. He's like smiling, and I think it's because of his girlfriend or whatever. But then it wasn't until also in the middle that we find out that that's what happened. Like I'm saying, like the plot didn't,
it's a very well-structured plot.
It didn't lay itself all out in front of you at the beginning. It like sort of like slowly introduced itself throughout, mm-hmm. and it had effects beyond just the trip itself, which was also a cool story.
Yeah.
Then it also got to throw in a bunch of like spaceballing as seafaring, like to the max or whatever.
I'm really enjoying this sort of stream of metaphors.
Yeah.
We'll make a sailor out of you yet.
Well,
yeah. We'll make a sailor of you yet. We'll make a sailor out of you yet.
Yeah.
We'll make a sailor of you yet. We'll make a sailor out of you yet.
Yeah.
We'll make a sailor of you yet.
He said it twice in that episode.
Yeah, well, he did. We'll get to that because we might need to. Do you want to analyze that to see if it's the same recording?
It's not. Look,
we'll make a sailor out of you yet.
Yeah.
We'll make a sailor of you yet.
I mentioned totally that audience because I think last week, Dan, quite correctly, in when we discussed TNG's conspiracy, suspected that there might have been a reused sound loop. And there may indeed have been, but we don't know.
I really do.
But we do have just a couple things to take care of before we get too far into our conversation.
All right, we should talk about other stuff first.
No, not other stuff. This will be quick. Because last week we had a bunch of voicemails and emails and stuff. This week we just have the one voicemail from our old friend Fraser. And
why not right now?
Okay, I'll click play. God damn it!
Hi guys, it's Fraser. I'm listening to your conspiracy episode at the moment. And you guys brought up something that reminded me. I had meant to send in a beautiful voicemail like this earlier when Dan totally was correct about the WV thing with the Germans. You would never just, if you could say a W and a V, you'd never switch them around. That's ridiculous. He was totally right. You guys were mean to him, and I was very upset. And then you guys just tangentially just brought it up here with a conspiracy. And that reminded me, I got a call. And tell you guys how stupid you are. Anyway, and here's another reason you're stupid. Like, 2 months ago, you guys were talking about boozy drinks, and then you were talking about that one that has Clamato in it, and you couldn't come up with the term Caesar. A Caesar is a very famous drink, and you turds are like, there's three of you in one room, and you're like, oh, what's that drink with the Clamato? Anyway, literally the best podcast on the planet. I just like busting your balls. You're awesome.
Thank you.
You know, Fraser. At first, I was concerned that he wasn't going to be belligerent in this.
I know.
Because he sounded all sweet at first, but I'm glad he brought it back.
Fraser
home.
Was sweetly belligerent because we do love Fraser's kind and benevolent belligerence.
Absolutely.
Yes. No.
That's right.
So fair points all around. Dan was correct about the switching the W's and the V's, and the Clamato juice drink being a Caesar. Jesse and I in particular ought to have known that. My issue is just I generally don't drink gross drinks, and that sounds really gross to me. Now, I'm sure there are people who are adherents to drinks that include Clamato juice, including there's the beer with the Clamato, and there's the Clamato with vodka, which is sort of like a pseudo Bloody Mary. Why not just have a real Bloody Mary? Anyway, we don't need to get into that.
You'll get the hang of it.
You're correct. We should have known that.
No.
Dan worked in the service industry years ago, and he didn't know it either.
Well, how am I supposed to...
Well, actually...
He's like, how are you supposed to jerk off into the space toilet? You figure it out. Sorry,
how about something to drink?
I apologize in advance that I'm going to get back a lot to Jake being a teenage boy, and there keep being references to him getting with girls and looking at porn on his pad.
You know, at risk of hurting the strength of my
my point right there about
previous argument?
The V&W thing.
Yeah.
My brother told
V&W.
Me, my brother
Volkswagen.
My brother told me that he would have pronounced the W's as V's. So.
Well, because to be fair to your brother, he like I am is pretentious.
No, he's not.
Yes, both he and I are. We're at least at the level of pretension that we would make a point to be like the name is Werner, not Werner.
I think it's because he's a singer, and so like he's used to singing in all different languages.
So you've just said pretentious using a different word.
I mean, I didn't say that. That's your.
I think it's because he's a singer.
No,
I think.
No, they sing in different languages. So, and look, that's your editorial, man, not mine. I mean, I'm just stating facts. Or stating facts about what it is and what I think it is.
I think both your brother and I are comfortable with our small degree of pretension that we permit ourselves.
You're not just saying that.
Well, anyway, thank
you're
you.
You're not just saying that.
Thanks, Fraser. And people should
thank you.
Check out our discussion of Conspiracy. It was a great, great discussion. Conspiracy is such a fun episode to watch and talk about. That's what we discussed last week. And another reason to bring it up is because, do you know who directed this week's episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine Explorers, season 3, episode 22, I believe?
Terry Farrell.
No, Cliff Boll.
Cliff Boll. That's who I was going to say.
Do you know who directed TNG's season 1 episode 25?
Cliff Boll. Conspiracy?
Cliff Boll!
Wow.
That seems hard to believe.
It isn't. Cliff Boll actually directed a huge number of Star Trek episodes. But it's kind of funny that just by pure accident, although I don't know, this is all related to Dan's podcast selection algorithm that he has, his proprietary secret. He doesn't tell Jesse and I how it works.
Word gets around.
But it gave us both Conspiracy and Explorers. So maybe your algorithm had like a Cliff Boll hard on. That's a technical term. That's a podcast term last week. And that's why it gave us both of those episodes.
How can that be?
I don't know. You'd have to tell me you're the one who designed the algorithm.
Oh, dear.
So everyone in the audience, if you're a new listener and you haven't sussed this out, I've known Dan for a very long time. Mm-hmm. We met when we were like 14 or something on Little League. Mm-hmm. But so I've known this guy for a very long time.
We were so close.
I got to say, when I get to communicate with him just via the sound clips, it's wonderful. It's a symphony of joy.
Sure. I understand.
Thank you.
I can hardly wait.
Okay. All right. So that's.
So what do you say you come with me?
I just realized that Terry Farrell, who plays Lieutenant Jadzia Dax, I realized that she has that name and that
Perry Farrell.
Perry Farrell has that other name. Yeah. That's not quite the same.
Okay, so you just realized Terry Farrell has a similar name to the singer Perry Farrell.
I mean, I guess I didn't just realize it. I just realized it. You know what I mean? It's a subtle difference.
All right.
And
we've recorded the event for posterity.
Okay, how about this? Terry Farrell and Perry Farrell's name differs by one... No more, no less, but one character.
One consonant sound.
One character.
Is the name spelled the same otherwise?
Yes, P and T. And P sounds like T. and you can drink both of them.
You're coming perilously close to singing that song from The Music Man.
Oh, dear.
You've got trouble right here in River City. And that stands...
I don't think so.
Starts with T, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for pool.
Oh, man.
Damn.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I was just saying P and T, TP. You can drink P and T, and you can clean it up with TP.
Wait. Okay, I'm not gonna push that one. again, before we get back to the episode, which we're going to do momentarily... No. I want to remind folks to take a listen to a brand new, super awesome daily Star Trek podcast called Trek.
Yes.
365. Trek.
Yes. Yes.
365.
Yes. Yes.
All right. I'm going to try to say Trek 365 without a sound clip in between. So let me see if I can do it. We'll see. And Dan, please, I do want you to attempt to insert a sound clip in between. It's not going to aggravate me. I enjoy the challenge. So the show, the new podcast is called Trek 365. I did it. Trek 365. The 365, as you might guess, it represents more than what you might think. First, it means there's an episode coming out every day, starting January 1st. So you've already got a bunch of episodes to listen to by the time you're listening to this episode. Probably 20 episodes. And there are lots of people contributing to Trek 365. It's been spearheaded by Isaac, has recruited all manner of podcasts, Star Trek podcasts, to contribute their own thoughts. And by the way, each episode is only 365 seconds long.
Well, it's wonderful.
I know. It truly is. So go check it out.
Then you know I'm right.
We've made some contributions and plan to make some more throughout this year. So go give that a download. It's not going to take up too much of your time. Each episode's only like 365 seconds long. That's not a lot.
Why not right now?
It's like 5 minutes. All right.
That is from the heart.
I think that's all the front matter of the show. So now
that's better.
We can truly get into the episode. We already talked about how much we liked it, and we thought it was well-structured, well-written, well-acted, well-produced, and very cool in all manner of ways. But,
seems reasonable.
But the beginning. I was reminded of a few things. First, it was just this beginning where Lita just clocks on to Bashir.
I'm Lita.
And does the whole fake cough thing. I was reminded that Lita was a very, very important character to me growing up.
Oh.
I was fond of Lita. I found her very charming, and I really enjoyed her arc. Right now, she starts off here eye candy.
Is this the first episode?
This is the first time
we've ever seen her.
This is where Lita is introduced, and the thing is, if all Lita ever were this hypersexualized male gaze target eye candy, that wouldn't have been great. There would be the 14-year-old lustfulness back in the day when I was watching this on TV. But no, Lita actually grew into a wonderful character, and Chase Masterson just did a brilliant job bringing so much more to this character than I think was probably written in the script. That was probably forced into the script by Rick Berman and his colleagues.
I know that Bashir is like, it's healthy for, people to flirt at a bar or whatever, but something about that interaction seemed like real creepy. And maybe it's the whole doctor patient role play that went on, but something
I agree with you, and I think you put put the nail in the head.
I hit the nail on the coffin. I put the spike in my brain.
You put the nail into the appropriate box for that size and gauge of nails.
Okay.
All right. Good.
How about something to drink?
Something was throwing me off about the interaction, and I couldn't quite figure it out. And I think you've just figured it out for me, and I appreciate that. I think it's that doctor.
I'll try to figure that out.
Because she's flirting with him by faking the cough, right? Which is sort of cute and charming and in a 90s sitcom kind of way.
Yeah. I like how in the Quarks bar, you can always hear the. Is that the. Domjot is like pool. What's the one that spins?
That's Dabo.
Dabo. You can always hear the Dabo wheel playing.
It's like
that.
More fun roulette.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so she's sort of using this excuse of needing to talk to the doctor to want to flirt with the doctor, which again, it's like, okay, it's not such a big deal other than the fact it has flavors of like 1950s, the masculine structure of society forces women into securing mates or what, I don't know, whatever, some weird philosophy. It's a very male philosophy.
Yeah.
There's an undercurrent of that in this otherwise cute little flirtation between the two.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I did find it was charming when Bashir is trying to get rid of Bax by doing the whole pad maneuver.
Right.
That old gag.
Like,
he's like, here's the data. I want
here's
you to get
the data.
Here's the data.
Here's the data. Hey, look. Here's the data.
Hey, Dax. Hey, Dax. Take a look at this pad.
Here's the data. You can take the data with you.
Get a little Cosby-ish.
No.
I know you don't intend to, but you're kind of drifting in that way.
Well, I guess that Will Ferrell's like Harry Carey impression kind of sounds like.
Yeah. It's just in that direction.
Sure.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. But I did like that. And it was an interesting start to this whole thing. Now, an important factor with the Bashir interaction with Dax, that is that if you're watching Deep Space Nine from the beginning, we're in season 3 now. At the beginning, Bashir was being a bit of a sex pest towards Dax.
Sex pest.
He had an obsession with Dax. And so here, when he is trying to dismiss Dax because he wants to flirt with Lita, that is, again, somewhat bizarrely, somewhat Berman-ishly, does represent character growth for Bashir. He's moved past his childish infatuation with Dax.
She never...
And now has a childish infatuation with
infatuation.
A completely different person.
Dax never reciprocated those feelings in any way to Bashir, did she?
Not Jadzia Dax.
Dax has been a father several times, but they didn't say that Dax has ever been a mother.
Dax has been a mother as well.
Well, they only said father.
Because in this context of this episode, being a father was the thing that counted. Because otherwise, Sisko may have dismissed Dax's advice.
No!
No.
Which he argued.
No, no, no.
Dax,
no.
Was, Dax,
no.
Dax was arguing, I think quite correctly,
what is this?
That she and her symbiont, she had the memories of being a father and so could offer some advice.
How can that be?
From a few different angles. However, you could see somebody like Sisko maybe saying like, well, you know what? Your frame of reference, having lived multiple lives and living in a different culture and having worms in your belly, is a different parental context. And plus, Trill society is a different society. We've seen that. They can be pretty strict. They can be pretty assholey in some ways. Mm-hmm. Ezri Dax's mom was up to all sorts of annoying shit.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry to hear that, Doctor.
So buttons. Elizabeth Lenz. I bet she became an optometrist.
Wait, is that the name of the competing doctor?
Yeah, Elizabeth Lenz. Doctor? She's a doctor. She became an optometrist.
Because her last name is Lenz?
Yeah.
How's it spelled? Did you look up how it was spelled?
I looked it up. It's spelled L-E-N-S-E, Lenz.
L-N-S.
L-E-N-S-E.
L-E-N-S-E.
Lenz. As in Lenz.
Is that how you spell it? Isn't as lens in, without the E, though?
Lens, as in, I like to look at a lens.
Or look through a lens?
I like to imagine a lens. See, I used it in a sentence. Sometimes I imagine a lens.
You do recognize, perhaps, that is not the best example. If you're going to come up with an example phrase to illustrate the word, the definition of the word lens, using it as a noun is not the best.
Okay, how about this? I was sitting at the dinner table, and I noticed a lens.
Same problem.
Oh.
You've used it as an object noun at the end of a sentence, as opposed to maybe explaining its purpose, which would help in the example define what the thing is used for. Like, I couldn't make out the text on the far wall, so I had to look through a lens.
I blew it.
You did blew it.
I did blew it.
You did blew it. Anything else about this, at least the beginning part of this Bashir stuff?
I beg your pardon?
I guess we should clarify. Bashir is first dealing with
pre-ganglionic fiber.
he's flirting with Lita, but he quickly abandons that.
I think
that.
It shows a lot of promise.
And this is really nicely written plot because first we see the character development. He's interested in Lita. He wants to dismiss Dax.
I'm Lita.
He used to have an infatuation with her. So boom, he's grown there. Lita is now his object of affection. However, boom, boom, Dax reveals to him the information that the Lexington is coming to the station in but a few weeks' time, mm-hmm. and that his rival, knowingly or unknowingly from Dax's perspective, I secretly think she knew. I think that's why she told him, because she was like, ha ha ha.
Oh, you think Dax was fucking with him?
I think she was fucking with him.
Seems reasonable.
She tells him this, and then all of a sudden, Bashir is distracted by that. And you know how much he wants to get with Lita. You know
about that.
You know how he's eager to be in that scenario. And by putting him in that scenario and then distracting him, it demonstrates to us the degree to which this rivalry Bashir had is occupying his mind, that he would abandon what seems to be a sure thing with Lita, mm-hmm. in order to become preoccupied with this this old school rival of his.
And it shows how vain he is later on, because he's talking about...
Oh, okay, sorry.
Because he's...
You said vain. I thought you said veiny. I'm sorry. I apologize.
It talks about how vain he is later,
It's like, I can't. We're starting already.
Okay. I want you to be able to give your point. So let's take a quick break. Is that cool? Because
okay.
It is break time. Let's take yes. a break, and then you can talk about all the veins you want when we get back. Okay. We will be right back.
Solid job. Let's take a break.
All right, we are back.
I just want to say, I'm glad you're here.
I'm glad you're here too, Dan.
We'll have a great time.
And we'll get to all that Cisco stuff in a bit, but Dan had this whole vein.
Well, first of all, I want
Bashir getting all veiny.
I want to go back to the W's and V's thing that we talked about earlier.
Oh, all the way back to that.
Last week I was talking about something about, like, there was a football player with the last name Werner.
Werner?
I was wrong. I was thinking of Bobby Wagner, who is a player for the NFL team, the Washington Commanders.
You mean Bobby Wagner?
It's Wagner is how they pronounce it, but that's the point I was making.
Wagner?
Nobody's ever going to say Wagner. 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 It'd be Wagner.
Wagner, hello. But I might say Wagner, depending on which, if I was in Germany and I saw Wagner.
Yes, like the composer is Wagner, but I'm saying if you're talking about Bobby Wagner, you're not going to call him Bobby Wagner, because it's like, that's not his name.
No.
Anyways, the point I was getting about Bashir is he was just showing... how vain he was being. He was talking about how, like, Dax was like, okay, well, you came in second, you know, why does it matter? Like, you're on the post that you wanted to have.
Pre-game glionic nerve, post-game glionic.
He was like, yeah, I requested to be on this. She's like, well, you got everything you wanted, so why are you, like, upset? And he's like, basically the whole thing of, like, oh, because now I know I'll always be second, and I know she could have had it if she wanted to, which is, like, classic sort of Bashir, like, full of himself kind of behavior.
But also insecurity.
Because
there's full of yourself, and then there's full of yourself with the undercurrent of insecurity, and that's what Bashir offered.
The way you did your finger, I thought about veiny undercurrent.
I apologize.
And your finger went up a hole,
It was an unintentional.
It's like your finger went up the veiny undercurrent right then. Yeah.
I was trying to mime sort of the idea of an undercurrent, a metaphorical undercurrent, by miming sort of a river undercurrent, but in doing so may have looked like I was suggesting Dan shove it up his ass.
Yeah.
What it was... couldn't tell you.
What are we waiting for?
You know, it's actually pretty good that she was able to defeat Bashir, because, like, him being like a
even you're putting in terms of, like, she defeated him.
I mean, you're right. It is insecurity, but it is also just, like, really, it's also, like, it's not good enough. I mean, it's funny how arrogance and insecurity can kind of, like, overlap. It's 100%. The whole concept of two extremes can kind of merge, but fall back onto each other.
Arrogance can emerge as a defense mechanism to the insecurity, but it can only hide it. It doesn't get rid of it.
So, yeah, these opposing points can sort of fold in on each other, because on the one hand, yes, it is insecure that you feel like, oh, she could have taken it from me. I don't have my shit together as much as I thought. But it is also vain, because you're just like, it's not good enough for me to get what I need in life. Anyways, they're both overlapping each other, but it's pretty good that she was able to get valedictorian over him, because he is like a superhuman. Isn't that the deal?
And so that's the thing is that,
so I mean, defeat a superhuman.
At this stage in Deep Space Nine, the writers did not know that.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
Alexander Siddig.
That's right.
He didn't know that. He was playing this. The writers were playing this. We need to read this and interpret this as it was originally written, which was a fairly standard storyline in which somebody has insecurities and reveals those insecurities. Later, yes, we learn in the fifth season that Dr. Bashir is genetically or was genetically enhanced, and that he purposefully failed the test, if I recall correctly, in order to avoid too much attention coming his way.
Wait, is that what they say in the future episode?
I think that's what they say in the...
That's totally retconning it then. Because
yes, they retconned it. At least that's my recollection, and you can write into feedback@iscastartrek.com with, Patrick, you're wrong! And you have to send us remember, you have to send us a picture with your fists balled up and on your hips, you know, with your elbows out at angles. And look at the camera all like, yeah, you know what I'm talking about. But yeah, as I recall, they retcon it as not being a mistake, but rather being one of the mechanisms to throw people off his trail, because if he did too well at everything, that would be a problem and he would get caught out, just like Una Chin Riley.
And so she didn't even recognize him. She didn't even know who he was.
Yeah.
She thought he was an Andorian, which... But,
it's all about misinterpretation.
But O'Brien was like, it's the only explanation. Right. She must be totally in love with you.
Well, I love that. And then followed up with like, or she totally hates you.
Yeah, right.
And
right.
Then what was... I remember I wrote down his line.
I hated you when we first met.
Yeah, because O'Brien says, I think she's in love with you. And he says, you're not an in-between kind of guy.
Yeah, right.
Which I think is such a brilliant term and very apt for somebody like Bashir. And you already played the line of O'Brien saying he hated you. But then there's this whole cute business of O'Brien unable to express his love for Bashir openly.
O'Brien!
He has to do it around in a circle. Yeah. Where he keeps saying, and then I didn't hate you anymore.
Right.
Or what was the phrase?
He says, I hated you when we first met. And then it says, why people love you hate you. I hated you when we first met. Really? Now he goes,
now what do you feel?
He goes, now that is from the heart. I really do. Well, he goes, oh yeah, that's right. He says, I hated you when we first met. He says, but now Bashir asks, he goes, well, now I don't. And then he's like, really? I mean that. I really do. Not hate you anymore, you know. So right, he's sort of like
Want to try that.
He didn't straight out say it. He took like several lines to sort of like to use some double negatives or whatever to finally get to the.
You didn't
want to
try that with an Irish accent.
No,
especially with Colm Meaney. Colm Meaney was a good defender of Irish people and culture on TNG and Deep Space Nine because, as we've mentioned in the past, Star Trek, particularly TOS and TNG, and also Voyager, had a weird thing with the Irish. They liked using Irish people as the butt of the joke.
Yeah,
somewhat peculiar.
Sorry to hear that, Doctor.
Yeah, indeed.
That is from the heart.
Heart. That. All right, so just to wrap up whole Bashir thing, right? So he is mad because, like you said, she ignores him in Quarks. Of course, it turns out to be a miscommunication, total Miyazaki-style storytelling where nobody's the bad guy in this case.
And then they end up like probably getting busy or something off camera.
Yeah, I was actually curious about that implication. This is... Look, Deep Space Nine is Deep Space Nine is my favorite Star Trek series for a variety of
right.
reasons.
I know it is for you. For me, it's
some
TNG.
Real,
for
some
me,
nostalgic.
It's TNG, but like,
yeah. Anybody can argue.
But DS9
D's knees.
All
up in your face.
D's knees is I would feel not scared to say it might be second.
All right, okay, I'm prefacing what I'm about to say by saying Deep Space Nine is my favorite Star Trek. However, it is still 90s Star Trek. It is still Berman Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And so it still has that taint of certain elements that are maybe not amazing. and some of that is like the Leeta stuff, which again, when I was 14 or 15 watching this, I was like digging the Leeta costume and all that other stuff. Mm-hmm. But this idea that Bashir is going to sleep with this old rival of his. They don't state it outright, but there's a little bit of that implication, and that's that Berman-esque twist. It was not, it didn't need to be in there. There was no need.
Oh, what I mean is,
to have even the possibility of a
companionship,
of a romantic interlude between these people. And the thing is they were already being progressive in the sense that his chief rival. There was no gender aspect, right? It didn't matter. Nobody commented on her being a woman or anything, obviously, because this is the future and that's all gone away, right? But they still have this, like, but we will still have sex with each other.
Right.
We still might have sex with them. So,
yeah. Oh, what I mean is,
you miss her companionship.
Check out Jake. Jake has a similar intonation in this episode.
Well,
he goes.
Same actor, same character.
Well,
no, but he does the same like little things, like
talking about the same topic too.
Like in this episode, he goes.
Well,
and in that other episode, which is.
What I mean is,
I think there's four in the
miss
uniform.
Her companionship.
Well, what
same
I mean
thing.
Is.
Yeah. Two different
miss
episodes.
Well,
and then he also says what I mean.
Talking about Cassidy Yates,
and
or his dad having sex in both cases.
What I mean is...
He says what I mean again in this episode. So he goes...
Well... What I mean is... Oh, what I mean is...
You miss her that's a good companionship.
Yeah, that's a good catch.
What? You miss talking.
What, Jake misses talking. He takes any opportunity to talk about his dad fucking.
Yeah. Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
But we'll get to talk about that.
Let's finish up this Bashir business.
Then there's Bruce Lussier's. That's where they met at some kind of... Do you remember? There's some kind of... Bruce Lussier's was the restaurant.
Yeah, and the Andorian friend.
Yeah, the Andorian...
Which is a very cute, meet-cute style misinterpretation, misunderstanding.
Bruce Lussier's.
Because it'll be fun.
That's nice. I like that.
Like that?
Because it'll be fun. Because it'll be fun. Because it'll be fun.
Bruce Lussier's. Bruce Lussier's.
You weren't a big fan of that one.
No, I like that.
Hmm.
I mean, it doesn't, we don't need to do it again, but I do quite
like Bruce Lussier's.
I do quite like
because it'll be fun.
What I mean is.
That's good.
This will do fine, Major. This will do fine, Major. This will do fine, Major. This will do fine, Major.
What I mean is.
How can that be?
I don't know.
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 What I mean is.
Because it'll be fun.
So, audience at home, again, Jesse's not here tonight. Jesse sits across from Dan normally, mm-hmm. and I, because of the location of the big mixing board and all that stuff, I sit sort of catty corner. But
cattywampus?
I say catty corner.
Well, they're two different meanings.
Well, you could also say kitty corner, but I don't like kitty corner.
Catty corner means catty a different. Corner. Catty corner and cattywampus are two totally different things.
Yes. Well, yes, they are.
I just like saying cattywampus.
I understand that, but kitty corner, catty corner are two different. I'm a catty corner person. I sit sort of catty corner. What would you say? About 10 feet away or so. My main issue is that, see, when Jesse's here, he's close enough that he can sort of like kick Dan under the table if he needs to. I can't reach over to Dan.
Because it'll be fun. This will be fine, Major. Because it'll be fun.
How can that be?
I don't know.
Anything else about the Bashir? What's her name again? Lens crafters?
It's something lens. It's something... It's Elizabeth Lenz.
Yeah, I enjoy this storyline. Again, there's a little problematic edges on the front and the back of it, but overall, especially when you don't consider the future direction of the Bashir character, this is a fun little example that describes some background, provides some background for and contours for Bashir's personality.
That when they were all drinking together, having drinky time, at one point...
You mean Bashir and O'Brien in O'Brien's room?
Yeah, when they were all singing that
when
drunk...
When Keiko was presumably gone with Molly.
Mm. Oh, yeah, that's a good point. I don't know where they were.
Well, Keiko was often on the planet's surface with Molly doing botanical stuff because they couldn't afford to pay... to pay Rosalind Zhao, I guess, or they didn't want to pay Rosalind Zhao to be hanging around until later.
Oh, is that why she wasn't in it?
Well, yeah, I'm joking around, but I'm sure practically, right, you don't need to have somebody just walk through the hallway. Yes, they're singing Jerusalem, which is a popular British drinking song.
It's funny how when people sing like these songs, they're probably so beautiful and melodic when properly done with the full instrumentation and everything. But when you get a couple drunk guys singing it, it just sounds kind of like atonal in a way.
It's also that old style of somewhat arrhythmic, atonal. Yeah.
But I bet if you put it together and nice and cleanly, it would come together more. I don't know.
Our friends in the UK, certainly in England, will be familiar with this tune. It's been around
for some time. But then Bashir's like, I'm going to go tell her now. And then Brian's like...
I think we should switch to Synthale.
So they're switching to Synthale because they're so drunk, right?
Yeah.
But like, okay, back to that whole discussion of what Synthale is.
Yeah.
You don't like drink a bunch of like beer one night and say like, oh, I drank too many like beers. I'm going to switch to like, you know, O'Doul's, like a non-alcoholic beer. It's not like you drink like, you know, a case of alcoholic beer and you decide you're too drunk. And so you switch to like, you know, what I just said, non-alcoholic beer, right?
Yeah. No, It's an odd thing to do.
Why would you switch to Synthale? Well, which makes me think that there is a subtle difference in Synthale maybe does give you some kind of buzz. It doesn't fuck you up in the same way.
I don't think it's been confirmed on screen. But I think that the prevailing view, and forgive me again, I haven't done a formal survey.
No.
But I do think that the prevailing view online is that certainly a prevailing view, if not the prevailing view online, is that Synthahall does provide a buzz, but a buzz that can be either swiftly or instantly recovered from, or that in some other way does not negatively impact your potential functioning. Now,
I'd love it.
Yes. Now you can argue over exactly what the contours, not to contours. Overuse that. I'm thinking of contours,
like the contours of a sexy car
or a sexy body,
like a body of a car
or a human body with whom you may wish to copulate.
Oh, you sound just like a Cardassian.
With all due respect, Major, you're beginning to sound like a Romulan.
You were enduring.
Didn't you talk about the sexy Cardassian necks as a child? You always have tried to imagine whether the neck ridges, like how far down the neck ridges.
Yeah,
went.
I imagine the neck ridges are somewhat resemble like the flaps on a king cobra.
And do you think they go to the penis?
I think they go from the neck where we see it, and it goes all the way down, like the lat muscles between the arms, like kind of like wings, like a lat muscle wing, except they're, but it's like flappy, not quite as, it doesn't take up as much space as the king cobra flaps, but it's like in that vein.
Because we never get to see a Cardassian out of uniform.
I've never thought of them as going towards the groin.
So you don't think there's a flappy Cardassian lizard flaps on the penis?
That you mention it, it's quite possible that there is.
I mean, we looked up the Rule 34 at one point, and there were multiple interpretations of a Cardassian body.
Just think of me as another guy.
Well, that's neither here nor there. All right.
You sound just like a Cardassian.
With all due respect, Major, you're beginning to sound like a Romulan.
I thought you were Andorian.
I think we've largely concluded the Bashir storyline. We spent a lot of time on it, even though it is very much the B story. But it's not a slight story. There's a lot that goes on. They're doing a lot in this story. It's good. I liked it. It was a good compliment to the main storyline, the A plot of Sisko having one of his obsessions. By the way, this is just something that Sisko does every now and then, and it's so funny because with Sisko, everyone's totally cool with it. Anytime you have an episode where Kirk or Janeway or Picard develop some sort of strange obsession, it's usually framed as and accepted in universe as something to be concerned about. Mm-hmm. It's like, what the fuck is going on? They're freaking us out because they've become obsessed with something. Have they been replaced by an alien? Are they under mind control? But no, with Sisko, it's just like every now and then Sisko's going to get super obsessed with some shit, and everyone's like, yeah, just he'll get it out of his system.
He just built like an entire ship from scratch by himself.
And Dan, would you agree with me that this is perhaps a sign of depression on him because he's the head of this very important space to base station. And he's just like, I'm going to spend all my fucking spare time doing this
he's
shit.
He's like disassociating from the rest of his crew,
he's
basically.
And then he's like, oh, I'm bitter that my son doesn't want to hang out with him. He's like, you're not hanging out with him. You're building a handmade ancient nonsense ship.
To be fair to him, he already did have plans for the weekend. But on top of that, you're asking him to go on some dangerous ass shit in this, but where even Dukat was like, now, of course, you can argue that Dukat warned him because he didn't want them to embarrass Cardassia with the Bajoran. Yeah. But Dukat did seem a little bit concerned.
I do, and I also thought,
and at the end too. So it was funny. So Dukat was like, he actually kind of sounded kind of menacing. He's like, well, I hope for your sake everything goes okay. Yeah. It sounded kind of menacing, but I think it seemed like he was actually concerned. And at the end, when they congratulated him, I know on the one hand, that was a pure diplomatic move to congratulate them, but they didn't have to pull the fireworks out. You know, I think it wasn't complete hatred.
I have a question for you.
I would say it wasn't complete hatred and deception, I think, that the Cardassians were trying to discourage him because they did congratulate him at
Cardassians
the end.
Cardassians, especially on Deep Space Nine, were never written so binarily, and that's what's awesome about it. Yeah. But here's the question for you about the end. When Dukat is explaining that, coincidentally, we can reveal we found a crash site that totally proves that this happened.
What an amazing coincidence.
Now, that exchange between Sisko and Dukat makes it clear that neither of them think it was a coincidence. Obviously, it wasn't. Right. Clearly, that was something that was discovered probably long ago by Cardassian archaeologists, and they kept it secret so as to not give Bajorans the credit for having accomplished such a thing. Okay.
Then I'm glad I was wrong.
That we get, that's very clear from the text of the episode. What is less clear to me is whether Dukat knew about it before, or whether Dukat himself was wryly saying, like, hey, I didn't know about this shit either, and they just sprung it on me. You and I are both were in the dark about this, Sisko, and we can both jokingly understand that my government hid this from everybody.
Oh, I don't know.
And I kind
of... So you think, like, when he was like, oh, this is such a coincidence, and Dukat was basically like, yeah, it's a coincidence. Like, you're saying they were both in the same sort of boat.
What I'm getting
they
at...
They were exchanging a knowing glance.
What I'm getting at is the way I interpret this is that earlier in the episode when Dukat is warning Sisko off, it isn't... because he knows about the story was true. I think at that stage in the story, he also is like, no, this is just some crazy stuff. And it wasn't until later he was like, yeah, okay, my government just fucking told me these pieces of shit.
But, you know, he must have known that it would be at least like a little embarrassing for Cardassia to have the Bajorans discover the space travel.
Yeah, but I think at the beginning, he didn't even think it was a possibility. Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly Sisko didn't think it was a possibility. Mm-hmm. Sisko's goal was only to, like, get through the, what was it, the Denorius belt? I was forgetting.
Yeah, it was the Denorius belt, which was the most difficult part of the trip, which is interesting because...
That's where they found the orbs.
So I don't know. I'm curious how much of the trip they intended to go on, because they weren't going to...
Charles Trip Tucker III?
Because they weren't going to do the whole thing. They were only going to do a small portion of the trip initially, and the Denorius belt happened to be the most difficult part. Maybe it's just the most difficult part of that leg. I'm just curious how much they intended to do. I also want to know if when the Bajorans, when they traveled and they ended up in Cardassia, now was that the first time they discovered Cardassian people, or is that ship the reason they discovered the Cardassians and then got like occupied and shit like that?
Well, it crashed. Remember, I mean, the whole point is they said we found a crash site.
Oh, yeah, it's so true.
It doesn't
sound
like it was necessarily a great ending. But yeah.
Where would I stay?
Indeed. But maybe they survived the crash and integrated into Cardassian society.
Well, so maybe the Cardassians shot them down and then the Cardassians found out about Bajor from that and then they occupied Bajor.
They're like, oh, we're going to go.
Or maybe they already knew about Cardassians. But, I have a hard time believing they already knew about Cardassians, because that would be quite a coincidence.
I don't think they knew about Cardassians.
But real quick, the
understanding, just for background, the understanding is that the ancient Bajorans were more advanced, not just than humans in the timeline, but also Cardassians. I believe that's supposed to be
right,
the case.
But I'm saying if they didn't know about the Cardassians, it would be an amazing coincidence.
What an amazing coincidence.
That they just so happened to hit a tachyon eddy that just so happened to take them to Cardassian airspace. You know, that's quite a coincidence.
Space.
It would be more believable if the tachyon eddy led them to this random place, and that's how they discovered the Cardassians, rather than they knew about them and it just so happened to bring them over there.
You know? I think that we can say, based on the events of this episode, that the eddy, I guess, is relatively stable over the course of those many thousands of years, because the eddy took Sisko and Jake to Cardassian space. It took this previous thing to Cardassian space. So in the context of this reality, it is less of a coincidence if it's just always doing that. If you happen to get caught up in this river of tachyons, you're going to end up in Cardassian space.
Well, no, I know that you're always going to end up in Cardassian space, but my point is, if they already knew about Cardassians,
I don't think they did.
I'm saying, then that's a big coincidence that the tachyon eddy happened to lead them to Cardassia.
I just don't see it as a coincidence if it's...
Because it could have led them anywhere. It could have led them out into the middle of nowhere in space. Space is big with a lot of emptiness.
No, I understand that, but I'm just saying, it could have been anywhere, so it might as well have been to a Cardassia.
Yeah, but Cardassia is also like the most intimate, like... They have the most intimate relationship with Cardassians, Bajorans and Cardassians with each other.
I don't see it.
And so I think it's a coincidence that these two cultures that are so intimately intertwined, it just so happens that we have a tachyon eddy that leads between us as well.
I mean, I get what you're saying. I guess when I think about it is sort of the retroactive thing, which is like, well, it's not a coincidence. Yes, they're intertwined because they're close together in space. It's the same thing as saying that, different cultures on Earth ran into each other. They didn't have to be that way. It could have been in a different order or a different, but it happened the way it happened. And then so that's just how things are. Everything's a coincidence, and that by that definition of the term. But I get what you're saying. It's, yeah, space is big, and they ended up at a planet instead of nowhere. Of course,
the ship will be ready to go in another week.
But then the story wouldn't have happened because the whole point at the beginning is, oh, there's a rumor, there's a myth that this happened, and whatever. It was. Yeah, it's a fun, served as a fun foundational adventure story for this character building, father son. A lot of father son cranking going on.
Cranking,
yeah, father son cranking. This is a father son cranking episode.
It sure was. Speaking of which, there was a lot of ship talk. Yeah, like it. So I have like an order of ship talk.
Oh, excellent! This is one of Dan's famous lists.
Well, this isn't sound clip collection. It's a sound order. It's in chronological order of sailor talk. I don't think I got. I think I got all of them. I don't know if I got all the sailor talk, but this is in order of the episode when all the sailor talk that happened. So we'll start at the beginning.
Now, by sailor talk, do you mean
not cursing and?
You mean like nautical terms?
Just think of me as another guy.
As in, like,
is that a nautical term? Is that a nautical phrase? Just think of me as another guy.
It's a nutsackle phrase. Right. Sorry, that was stupid.
is that your variation on the term nautical? Is nutsackatal?
Well,
Sisyphusian.
These will trim the sprit sails.
Trim the starboard sprit about 6 degrees.
We'll be tacking against the light most of the way.
Our mast support gave way.
Tacking against the light.
The starboard sprit is fouling one of the mainsails.
I gotta start over now.
You don't have to start. Okay, yes, they do. Start from that thing.
These will trim the sprit sails.
Trim the starboard sprit about 6 degrees.
We'll be tacking against the light most of the way.
A mast support gave way. The starboard sprit is fouling one of the mainsails. We're still getting a lot of spill off the sails.
We won't be able to make much headway with each tug.
Lay off the port sprit.
We checked the rigging.
We did it.
That was all. Did you hear all that ship talk?
Yes, I did. Now.
There's all that ship talk, and that was in order.
Oh, that was in order, or that was an order?
That was in order. Okay. It was an order.
Okay, just,
that was an order from beginning to end of the episode.
I understand. And then when I interrupted you inadvertently because I was commenting that Sisko at one point refers to tacking into the light instead of tacking into the wind.
We'll be tacking against the light most of the way.
You know,
but then you insisted on replaying everything in order.
Yeah, because
I must admit, I briefly thought, oh, there's going to be some punchline or some other reason why they all have to be played in order in a specific rhythm.
Well, the punchline was that it was in the order of the episode. It kind of gives you an idea of the progression of this, try to gather what happened to the story based upon the order of ship talk. You know what I'm saying? Because it starts with like...
These will trim the sprit sails.
And then we get to the...
A mast support gave way.
Uh-oh! And then there's like...
We're still getting a lot of spill off the sails.
Oh no! And it's like...
We check the rigging.
It's like, yeah, we're getting there. You know, it's like telling a story. It's telling the story through ship talk.
Okay.
Instead of watching the episode to get the story, you get the story through ship talk. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I appreciate that you are, again, playing all these clips, except this time you're annotating them. You're verbally annotating each of the clips.
Here's a pronunciation discrepancy. Here we go.
The starboard sprit is fouling one of the mainsails.
Mainsails? Mm-hmm. Jake then says...
We lost the jib and port mainsail. Yeah.
So Sisko says mainsail, and then Jake says mainsail. Here's another angle of that.
The starboard sprit is fouling one of the mainsails.
He says mainsail, but then Sisko goes on to say...
These will trim the sprit sails.
So he says mainsails, but he says sprit sails. Yeah.
It's because he is more pretentious than Jake. Jake has not yet developed pretension. But, he's too young for pretension.
No, but like I'm saying, why would you pronounce it mainsail and sprit sail? Why wouldn't you pronounce it spritzel?
Because that would, again, this supports the idea that this is pretension. Because if it were merely an accent or an affectation, I agree with you, you would expect him to apply that affectation to all similar phrases, but he doesn't. And because he doesn't, we can take that as evidence that mainsail is
evidence!
Is a term, thank you, is a term that only true nautical people would know, and thus there is a certain degree of pretension to use.
So you're saying,
and differentiate it from the spliff.
So so you're saying mainsail is correct, but you wouldn't say spritzel. You'd say spritz.
You'd say spritz sail. I'm inferring.
I think you're just guessing. Context. I think you're talking. A little part of you is talking out of your ass, but it makes sense.
What you call guessing, I call highly sophisticated, highly intellectual
obfuscation.
Inference. No, it is inference.
You're obfuscating.
But you know what?
I'm not joking, Lee.
What I'm not doing is I'm not going to miss an opportunity to take a break.
I don't get it.
No, you get it indeed.
You don't get it.
No, just,
I don't get it.
We all get it. We're all getting the fact that it's time to take a break. We're going to take
weightlessness makes
a brief break. From the audience perspective, this is going to be a brief break. From our perspective, who knows? Dan and I could get up to all sorts of crazy shit. We might call Jesse and just shoot the shit for a while and say, hey, Jesse, what's up? Well, I don't know. We might do that, but we'll see.
Proof that time is a construct.
Indeed. Okay, we will be right back.
Excuse me, for just one second. Stay there.
All right, we are back.
Welcome.
See, that applies because that's when Ducat says welcome at the end, and we're at the last break.
Ah.
Isn't that cool? Isn't that cool how I did that? Yeah. Isn't that cool?
Weightlessness makes me queasy.
Yeah, I want to point out that Sisko is not being like, he's so 100% about every single thing. Even
I've got this in my notes here.
Yeah, even down to like the fucking space food. It's like, you're okay with like, you know, having gravity, but you still insist on having space food, you know?
I was going to say, gravity net is not an insignificant modification.
Yeah, I know.
We know why they did it.
Because of production values.
Because it would be crazy. Yeah, to be, right. They must spend a few $1 million on this episode to have them floating around for no
particular reason. This isn't Apollo 13, you know?
No, indeed it is not.
That'd be cool if they made it
although
like
it came out around a similar time.
It'd be awesome if they made like, if they remade that episode into like a movie where, and they did that trick with the plane goes up and down and makes you float or look like
the
you float.
Trick.
The trick.
There's one trick that no one wants you to know about.
I'll need a saber saw.
A saber
it should
saw.
Only take about 4-5 days.
A saber saw?
A story.
A Romulan.
A freighter captain.
Okay.
I think this sums up this whole episode.
A saber saw?
A story.
A Romulan.
A freighter captain.
She doesn't have that much to do with it. But.
No. I do think that's a succinct description. One of the things that is so awesome and wonderful about this particular episode and about Deep Space Nine more generally is it's so nice to have stories about really good dads trying to be really great dads.
This is
so rare because especially in Star Trek, more commonly than not, fathers are either absent or abusive.
Yeah, right.
That's just the way it is for a lot of the characters.
It is true.
For male characters, for female characters, for young characters, for old characters. So often, the father is absent or abusive. Riker's dad is abusive. Picard's dad, it turns out to be more complicated than we thought, but he had a feelings of abandonment from his father and too much control from his father and things like that. And the list goes on and on and on. I know I only listed two examples, but you all are very smart Star Trek fans. You can conjure a number of other examples, including Data, if you count Dr. Soong.
Sabotage.
Sabotage.
But yes.
We're dangerous.
On Deep Space Nine, we have Sisko as a widower, a single father in a high pressure career who still manages. We were joking earlier, of course, about Sisko abandoning Jake for this project, but he loves his son and he wants to be a good father and he is a good father, but he's also,
supportive.
One of the things he's most insecure about, Sisko is such a confident person, but they show this confident, strong person, having insecurities about being a good father. He really, really wants to be a good father. And we see that in his conversation with Dax. And it's just nice to see that. And it kind of made me think about how Star Trek actually does the opposite. Opposite is not even the right thing because they're doing the same thing. It's a variation on what you see in Disney. In Disney, it's usually the mothers who are absent or abusive.
Like Bambi's mother.
Well, Bambi's mother became absent. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
There was a process.
Not quite the same.
They went through a process in which she was not absent, and then through a certain process, Bambi's mother became absent.
Maybe.
But you have the wicked stepmothers, you have just the dead mothers, etc.
Which is worse.
Well, yeah. Very common.
Sorry to hear that.
But of course, the context is different. It's just, and I don't know. It's just kind of interesting to think about how often that is the case in Star Trek, whether overtly or implicitly, this issue with the fathers and Sisko serving as such an example of the reverse of that, where he's present and he in fact fears not being present for his son, and really part of this adventure he's doing it is his own Sisko-ish obsession, but he's really excited about the possibility of Jake joining him on a father-son crankdown adventure, because as I said,
the ship will be ready to go in another week.
There's lots of cranking going on in this episode.
The ship will be ready to go in another week.
Doesn't it sound like he's saying something other than ship?
All right, let's try again.
The ship will be ready to go in another week.
This shit will be ready to go in another week.
The ship will be ready to go in another week.
Yep. Sounds like he's saying shit.
One thing that's kind of goofy here is, okay, in addition to the gravity net thing, the other thing is, they didn't need to say that Sisko was going to make everything like by hand, because this is absurd. That's unbelievable. Yeah. It's totally, they should have just been like, they should have stated outright what is obviously must be the case, that he replicated most of these things, but
he didn't replicate it.
Well, he says he did, or he implies at the beginning, he's like, I want to do everything using the tools. I want to have a saber saw.
I'll need a saber saw.
You know, it's like, that's absurd. Come on.
Saber saw?
Replicators, just replicate it to the parameters that are
necessary. So there was a scene about that. It begins with Sisko talking about how he's expecting a lumber shipment. So he's not replicating lumber. He's getting a shipment. Yeah. Okay. Then he talks about needing a saber saw. But that's the point where O'Brien's like, why don't you just use a laser cutter?
Yeah.
But you know what? Why wasn't O'Brien questioning the fact that he was expecting lumber? You know what I mean? Because like, first he says, I'm expecting lumber. And if O'Brien's okay with that and doesn't ask, why don't you just replicate it? He should have been okay with him saying, I need a saber saw. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
Because why would you question him about the saber saw, but not the fact that he's getting lumber shipped into the ship?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. It just seems like, you know, that's the thing that's going on with it. There was a whole montage of him.
I totally forgot about that. You're right. Total montage.
There's a list of 9 items. So in order.
Now here's another Dan list.
Sisko building ship montage. So number 1, he's welding some shit. Number 2, he's getting some kind of burlap looking sail thing up. Number 3, he's just looking at star charts. 4, he's carrying an engine or something. 5, he's carrying something.
There's no engine.
Huh? Oh, that's right. There's no engine. Yeah, no. Yeah, what was it?
I think it was part of the cranks.
Okay, maybe
this is
the crank.
A crank heavy.
Yeah, there's no engine.
Sisko is cranking down. Jake is cranking down.
Speaking
father, of father son crank
well,
jobs.
Speaking of, well, maybe I should say this after. I was going to talk about like the lack of engine noise, but let's finish this list.
All right.
5. He's carrying something else with that tool that you throw over your shoulder that allows you to carry buckets of water. You know
over
what I'm talking
the
about?
Shoulder boulder like, holder.
No, not. I know what you're talking about. No, not that. When you put, you know, when they show in movies when they have a pole over their shoulders and on either side is a bucket of water. Yeah. You know, he was carrying something like that. And
but I think got the same vibe as you. But my impression was that it was a structural piece.
Well, it seemed like it was. So you don't think it was holding something? You think it was just part of it?
I think if it was holding something, it might be worth showing.
So, then he's lifting something we don't see into something else we don't see. Then there's the opening and the closing of the sphincter tool, which we later find out is covers
porthole.
The porthole.
Porthole.
Yeah, and I'm glad we got
porthole or portal, mainsail.
I'm
spurf salad. Spliffle.
Stakel Wakems. I'm glad they showed us that tool and the thing in action, right?
The iris.
Yeah, I love that tool. First of all, or not, it's not whatever you call it. I guess it
really oughtn't be called a tool in this context. I do enjoy you saying the word tool.
Tool. I'm glad they showed it in action though. And I like watching that thing open and close, and I'm glad they somehow incorporated that into that. They probably just had one of those laying around and they just wanted to see if they could use it. Then number 8, there was more welding, but his welder looked like more floppy and less pointy than the first one. The first welder he had was all pointy and long, but this was like a floppier looking welder. And then, at the end he like lifts his mask up and he just goes, oh yes, that was the whole montage. So recounting it, it doesn't sound that exciting. It's not like recounting Rocky where it's like, yeah, then he was punching some shit and then he ran around some shit and then he punched some more shit. Like, that sounds like super exciting. This doesn't sound that exciting as a montage, but I will say it was interesting. I like that there was just the random star charts he was just kind of looking at, you know. I mean, you got to make a map, right? But what I was saying about the engine, about the engine, how there's no engine, and it reminded me about the scene where they were talking about how this was a great scene actually when he was talking
really
about
good scene,
when it, how quiet it was. He was like, "Listen to this. What do you it was that classic like, do you hear that?" And they're like, "Hear what? Nothing at all." But they was done really well because it was the way he talked about like being on the on like a ship at sea by yourself. It really. There was a peacefulness to that whole scene.
It was evocative.
Yeah, it was. There was the imagery was great, and it made me feel peaceful. And then I like when he brought about like, but instead of the stars above us, we're among them. Because then that's evocative too of like imagining where we started and where they are now, and it sort of implies all this stuff in between. And there's just something really cool about like that juxtaposition of that. So I thought that was a pretty cool scene.
Again, it's a great Star Trek episode. And I don't mean just like, it was a great Star Trek episode. No, Star Trek, as in the meaning of the show, the adventure, getting out into quite literally into space, but sort of more metaphorically into the universe.
But then I noticed later on when he said to Jake that he liked his story, which by the way, it sounded like patronizing sort of. I like it when Jake asked how his story was.
Yeah.
I mean, he goes,
play it.
I liked it.
Doesn't it sound like he's kind of like, it was all right. It was all right. I mean, he did say it has a lot of promise, but during that scene, I wonder if you can hear it in here.
I liked it.
You can hear it. There's a hum.
Yeah, I think there's a hum, but it's not an engine hum. The idea is that it's a different vibes.
I felt like it was quieter when he was talking about the fact that there was no hum. I felt that scene was louder for some reason. I'd have to go back and check, but I think it was a slight inconsistency.
Pull out your old decibel meter.
Yeah, my decibelometer.
Is that what it's called?
A decibelometer.
Balana's on it?
Balana's on it.
Balana's on it.
So they are on this ship, and one of the fun parts of this episode is when the ship first takes off, and again, Sisko and Jake are just cranking and cranking and cranking, popping open those sails, and yeah, it's very early 90s CGI, but it still manages to look really beautiful and interesting, too, because it kind of looks like, I don't know, a beetle bat creature ship, right? The ship looks like a beetle body of some sort or a scarab, and then it has these crazy wings that look, I don't know, pterodactylish, bat-ish. I don't know. I was really intrigued by the architecture of this ship.
I thought the design was really interesting how they made the ship because, they had the two... The two sails on the side that looked like wings, and then they had some that were like 90 degrees perpendicular that were slightly up front. Mm-hmm. And then it looked like the top one, the fifth sail, that actually looked like a sailboat sail. Mm-hmm. If you look at that, that was the one sailboat sail combined with these other sails.
Yeah.
So it was like wing sails, like boat sail, and then the two weird flappies of the front made it look like a dragon or something.
People at home, people listening in the audience, Dan is acting out all of these sails.
Yeah. The dragon one was the one that was perpendicular, that was all looked like dragon fin. Face fins. You know how dragons have face fins?
Dragon D's nuts.
Dragons have face fins. Face fin dragons, you know what I'm saying?
And yes, I get what you're saying. That face fins. Speaking of face fins, early on in this episode, Sisko reveals to Jake his new goatee.
Oh, right.
Because Sisko was on a trip, and when he came back, he had a goatee. He still had hair. He wasn't shaved bald yet. That comes later.
Right. It's
but
true.
The behind the scenes reason.
If he just decided to shave later or if he was purposely trying to make a smooth transition.
Well, okay. So Avery Brooks, from the beginning, wanted to wear his natural style, which was goatee, shaved head. That was his preference. But because of racism, the TV producers were like, hold your horses, bald, scary black man. That's rare. It's going to scare all the white people.
Yeah.
And scared white people, we only like them scared in certain circumstances. We're not going to make money off of them, scared white people, if we scare them off. That was their perception.
Oh, dear.
Now, of course, it was ridiculous. eventually Avery Brooks was able to force the issue and they let him go back to his natural style. And then that's what most people think of Sisko now. That's mm-hmm. what people think of. It did not scare away all the white people. I know. I was a white people one time.
Yep.
And I wasn't scared by it. In fact,
I was so nervous, I almost passed out.
I was intensely attracted to the bald hair, goatee, strong, masculine yeah. man although, who loves his son.
Although I was attracted to Sisko when he punched out Q, but like maybe he would have been yeah. even more attractive if he had the goatee.
I think he probably would maybe even, well, you know, that's a, you know, counterfactual. It's hard to judge.
Yeah.
Because it didn't happen that way.
Speaking of the ship, we see the shot of the ship. Interestingly enough, I think on Chakotea.net on the script, this seems like an editorial that they editorialized one part of it
on Chakotea.
They put in parentheses when it describes the ship coming out, and the sentence says, "The bizarre little ship leaves DS9. Don't ask how."
That is yeah. very clearly editorialized.
Yeah, it is. But I was like, "Huh, that's interesting. I never thought about that. We don't really know how that thing gets airborne or." Seaborne.
Yeah, I guess it just leaves the cargo bay.
They say drop it out or something. Yeah, I don't know.
Well,
why not?
So they're out there hanging out, we've already discussed the wonderful father-son conversations. Then there's the conversation Jake has eventually with his father, where he talks about wanting to become a writer and this potential, you know, this opportunity he has.
Pennington.
Yes.
It's pen because they have pens there.
I wanted to bring this up. It's in New Zealand, and Star Trek has this, or Silver Age Star Trek, this era of Star Trek has this weird obsession with New Zealand because that's where Tom Paris was in
right.
jail in a penitentiary. Pennington, penitentiary.
Oh, I was
all
thinking
in New Zealand.
I was thinking Pennington as in Penn's Right Stories.
Well, that too.
But that actually yours makes a little more sense.
No, actually, to be fair, yours makes way more sense in the context of this show, but mine is maybe more fun when you connect it to Voyager and Tom Paris being interned at a New Zealand penitentiary where he was just out hanging out in the jungle fixing something.
I beg your pardon?
I don't know.
So they're in there, and then there's a few fun things happen. We already talked about the cranking, all the incessant cranking. We talked about the anal iris. and the zero gravity pee-pee and poo-poo room.
Pee-pee and poo-poo room.
But what we haven't talked about yet.
What am I supposed to?
Did you catch this? Did you catch this part? At one point. At one point, they were like,
"How about something to drink?"
They were like, "Hammock time, yo."
Hammock time,
yo. Because right after that, Jake said,
"Yo,
yeah, hammock time, yo."
Hammock time,
yo.
It's like hammer time.
I know. That was actually going to be my outro to this episode.
Okay, you can do it again.
Hammock time,
yo.
Or you can still that can still be your outro.
It
How
can
about
still
that?
Be it.
Right on. I gave you permission.
I thought, yeah, that was like one of my favorite lines.
I thought that was really cute.
Hammock time.
Yo.
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 Part of me feels like Cirroc Lofton improvised that or something.
I feel like it. Or they got together and they're like, wouldn't this be hilarious?
Hammock time.
Yo.
By the way, I love the clothes that Jake Sisko
yeah,
wears.
Yeah, Jake Sisko. He's got the most
colorful, shiny, stylish clothing, the future clothing that
I want to start wearing those clothes. I'm sure you can get some of that stuff online somewhere.
Yeah. Hammock time. Yeah.
The other thing, so hammock time was good. We alluded to it earlier, but Jake, just with all his winking and effing and jeffing about him fucking, about his dad fucking, and I hate to be so crude.
What I mean is,
but that's what it is, and it's cute. I mean, on the one hand, I think it's wonderful. I think it's wonderful and appropriate that Jake is comfortable enough with his father to be like, "Hey, Dad.
Hey, Dad.
Hey, Dad.
Hey, Dad.
Okay.
Oh, what I mean is, you miss her companionship. You miss talking.
And fucking." I mean,
well, what I mean is,
yeah,
it's, I guess you call it innuendo, but Jake is just with the winking and the everything. It's
always
cute.
I know. He's always going like, "Hey. It's it, you know, like that kind of like
it's
kinda,
healthy.
Yeah.
I guess you're not used to sleeping alone anymore. What I mean is,
but
you miss talking, sharing insights about command and duty.
Duty.
I like when he's like, you got to make time for these things. When right. he's telling his dad. And when he says, you got to make time for these things, mm-hmm. he's not talking about companionship or a relationship. Mm-hmm. He's talking about he thinks his dad needs to get laid. Mm-hmm. And that's one of his concerns. And then later his dad's like, hey, I don't want you to defer going to this prestigious school on my account because you're worried about me
getting
laid. And Jake is trying to say like, look, I do want you to get laid. I also want to get laid. And Jake has calculated, that's my understanding of the ending of this episode, that Jake has calculated that the best route to him getting laid is staying on Deep Space Nine and having fun adventures, because when it comes down to it, Deep Space Nine is a dirty, crazy, Old West style place with all manner of smuggling and drugs and sex and pornography.
You know about that.
In the holosuites going on. I mean, it's a place of depravity and degradation for those who are seeking it. It's available.
I had you going there.
I thought it was time for change.
And that,
yeah, it is.
And that starts with T, or starts with C and rhymes with P, and that stands for pool.
Poop. TP.
You got trouble right here in Bajor City.
Right here in Bajor City.
Yeah, I'm making a reference to the Music Man again.
I think we should switch to Synthale.
I wanted to talk about, real quick, Jake said he wanted to defer, and then Captain Sisko says, he starts telling him about how like he went to college and that he visited home every night for dinner, and Jake was like, you must have used up a month's worth of transporter credits. This is an example of scarcity in Star Trek.
Yeah.
Scarcity.
Well, there's scarcity.
You
there's...
did a weird gurgle when you did that.
You went like, really? Did you like that?
I can't do
it. It was a purely intellectual gurgle, I assure you.
What are these?
Sophisticated gurgle. You have natural scarcity and then you have artificial scarcity. There's no evidence that disproves the idea that the transporter credits were a form of artificial scarcity in the context of Sisko being a student.
They just say no scarcity. You're saying that there's no artificial scarcity in the future? Because my understanding is there's just no scarcity in the future.
No.
That's the whole joke.
I think there's plenty of artificial scarcity. I think that there's no
the whole joke
natural
of,
scarcity.
In other words,
they have unlimited, they have essentially, effectively unlimited access to food and resources.
Right.
That doesn't mean there aren't various systems to constrain things under specific contexts, like going to school. I can understand going to school. You don't need to have an 18-year-old person just have unlimited. But you can do anything you want, anytime, for forever, for whatever. You're in Starfleet, where you have to do homework.
That was the whole joke in that Lower Decks episode, because, like, you know, she was riding that motor. The planet had just discovered like
post scarcity.
There was a post scarcity society.
Basically, you get replicated.
And so someone was driving on some kind of floaty motorcycle,
yes,
and like they just kind of threw it away.
Yeah,
they
were, that's
like,
right. See,
because they didn't give a shit. Because
which is an example where you can be like, well, now you have to, somebody has to dispose of that or clean it up or whatever. So you would nevertheless have some sort of social rules.
So you think this culture, because it's so close to being close to the beginning of its post-scarcity era, they're doing whatever, but over time they're going to start limits on things.
You figure that out, and then you can create artificial markets.
Yeah, we'll make a sailor of you yet.
We've seen other examples of artificial markets on starships, particularly in modern treks like Lower Decks and Discovery, where there are limitations on the recipes available to different levels of crew, for example, right? The Lower Decks talk about not having access to like full pizzas in the replicator. They can only access the program for like single slice pizzas, if I recall, something along those lines, right? There's no reason for that naturally, but that clearly is an artificial scarcity set up for whatever particular reason.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe just cruelty. Starfleet may simply be cruel to its own people.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Mm-hmm. Okay, we got to wrap things up here, so let's go through any bits and bobs. One thing I thought was interesting with this whole Lexington storyline was when Bashir was talking to Elizabeth Lenz.
She's
basically articulating the thesis of Deep Space Nine, which is when she's talking about being jealous of his position, she says, you get to stay here long term and work on long term projects and see the fruit of your labors. And then she refers to the Lexington and by extension, the Enterprise and Voyager. They have a whole fuck 'em and chuck 'em philosophy. Mm-hmm. There's a fuck 'em and chuck 'em story philosophy. You fly in, you dibble around with the local society, you futz around a little bit, and then you fly off.
You don't get to follow up.
The argument, the thesis statement for Deep Space Nine as a project was put people in a situation where they have no choice but to live with the results of their previous actions. And that's why the serialization, while not on purpose initially, was much more natural than perhaps in TNG and Voyager and some other places where they had to take some extra steps to have some continuing storyline.
Seems reasonable.
Ah, good. I'm glad.
Jake, I really am impressed.
Did you notice when Jake was going onto the ship before he got on the ship and he was hilariously smiling and bobbing his head through the portal?
Yeah.
And he walked in, he's like,
hello.
He goes, hello. But like before, and he's all like, you know, dancing around with his face. Like his face is all like jumping and bobbing. Yeah, he's got this big shit-eating grin on his face, which is such a weird fucking saying. But like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Because it's like you're so happy that you're about to eat some shit.
Yeah, right.
That's why you have that shit-eating grin.
Right. Built like a brick shit house. Is that something that other people say?
You mean people other than you?
I mean, I don't say it, but I've heard it. Do you think people across the ocean have heard that term?
I don't know. We do have a very international audience, so if you are outside of North America, please let us know if you've ever heard of or used the term built like a brick shithouse. Has nothing to do with the episode, but it came up during our conversation, so, you know.
And how often do you talk about having a shit-eating grin?
Yes, we would also like to know that.
I would think that the ship traveling at warp speed, it would be torn apart, but I guess there's some kind of protective field in the tachyon.
Wind warp.
It is.
Yeah, wind warp, solar wind warp. Well, tachyon wind warp.
It's just like, it seems like that shit wouldn't be able to hold up to that kind of thing. I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
But once you go down that line, you're like, well, nothing's going to travel faster than the speed of light anyway, due to limitations of physics.
Right. Well, maybe they're using like the thing they show in the movies where they fold the paper in half and they push the pencil through the paper.
Space pencil.
Yeah. When they do that, maybe that's what the FTL really is. It's just folding the paper in half and sticking the pencil through it.
Precisely correct. Did you catch the scene? So, okay. We've talked many times about how Deep Space Nine, one of the nice things about it is they're good at not talking down to the audience. Mm-hmm. Lower Decks was really good about this too, right? Sophisticated stories and lots of Star Trek. This is not, all the series have done this to one degree or another. I think with Deep Space Nine, one could argue more consistently trusted the audience to understand what was going on, but not always. And there is an example of that in this case where at the end of the episode, there's all the cheering and the fireworks and all this. And then
we did it.
We did it. We proved this trip is possible. I just have a note here, like, thanks for the unnecessary exposition, Jake.
Yeah.
And I guarantee it really, it felt so forced. It really did seem like somebody came in and was like, these people got to be reminded. You got to remind the audience they're so stupid. They got morons.
Yeah, they got notes from
you got to tell them that this is the whole point of this episode is we prove this trip is possible. That's why we're celebrating. Otherwise, they won't understand why we're celebrating.
That was probably in one of their notes that the writers got when they submitted the episode.
Stupid notes.
By the end, I couldn't tell if it looked like it only had like two sails by the end.
Well, they did lose a bunch of sails along the way.
Yeah, it seems like it. I don't know if they put some away or not, because originally when the first one broke, it was just the right wing. But at the end, I think there was only like a couple.
Hard to tell. There was so much cranking going on.
You and your cranking.
You saw how much cranking there were going on.
I mean, you
locking and loading and cranking and you know. It was just a lot.
There was a lot of cranking.
All right. While you're looking,
They just had two sails left. They only had left. They're missing the perpendicular sail and the boat sail. Or just, it looks like they have two
and
cells.
The coxswain and the earlier,
okay.
Munsell.
Okay, so what is Muncie, they jettison the airplane wing, and then they got rid of one of the perpendicular sails and the boat sail. So they would have one wing and one perpendicular sail, one dragon fin sail, one wing sail and one dragon face, one wing sail.
Again, I really wish the audience could see how Dan is acting out these different sail shapes, because he's really doing a good job of it.
One,
I know exactly which sails he is referring. Yeah,
the wing sail and the dragon face fin sail.
Yeah.
The dragon face fin sail. But yeah, so when they originally lost it, like Sisko was like ready to give up, like right away. He was like, guess that's all. I guess we got to go home now. And all it took was Jake to say like, no, let's try to keep doing it. And he was like,
plucky,
you know,
Jake,
what?
Plucky old Jake.
And then he was like, but then Sisko was like, you know what? You're right. Like, my question is why did Sisko give up so easily? If all it took was Jake to say, let's try harder. Like, I would think that in order for Sisko to want to go home, there would have to have been some irreparable shit that went on. But if all it takes is Jake to say like, nah, let's do it anyway. Like, that just sounds like Sisko gave up on the first sign of trouble.
Yeah, which I agree with you. On the other hand, I also kind of saw it as like, up to that point, Sisko was kind of like, you know, Jake's not super into this or whatever. And it was kind of an opportunity for Jake to be like, no, this is cool. We're having
fun.
That's
true. Yeah, it was his way of testing to see if Jake wanted him to do it. You're right.
That's not quite what I said. But yes, that's another interpretation.
Then I'm glad I was wrong.
Okay, any duties or no duties? Any lists? Any final things before I do the whole social media and what's going on next week business? You're looking. He's looking up and down.
Oh,
you'd think he'd remember. This is the kind of thing you'd think you'd remember. All right. While he's playing those sounds, going through whatever remaining sounds. Probably expect a lot of the laughter sounds coming up. That was a very good episode of Star Trek. Star Trek Deep Space Nine's Explorers.
And did those
it's a wonderful character focused episode, the type of thing that Deep Space Nine in particular always excelled at. An adventure of the mind and an adventure in relationships. A very good one.
Ooh, adventure of the mind and adventure of the relationships. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, that's what it was.
I like that.
Okay, so next week, we don't know because we forgot.
I forgot. I fucked up. I was supposed to have run next week's algorithm, and like on my way here, I was like, oh shit. Yeah.
Did you think
Sisko's pad when he was like looking, trying to contact Starfleet? Like, you know, when they were lost after this, the
chunky
Eddie
pad.
It looked like a speak and spell. You remember those speak and spells?
Oh, I remember.
It looked like a big speak and spell.
Well, maybe it were.
And he lied to Jake. Jake was like, we're not going to run out of air, right? And he was like, oh, we'll be fine. It was total bullshit. He goes,
sure.
That was kind of like when he said,
it's good.
He like was bullshitting about the story, and he was bullshitting about air.
All right. Bullshit indeed.
bullshit indeed. bullshit indeed.
But probably by the time the episode is up, look in the show notes. We'll know what we're talking about next week. So just look in the show notes in the description or check out social media.
The ship will be ready to go in another week.
Social media, you say, Patrick? What do you mean, social media? You know what I mean. It's got Star Trek social media, which is at It's Got Star Trek. Most places at symbol, It's Got Star Trek, Blue Sky, Facebook, Twitter, all, you know, all that stuff. Mastodon.
With all due respect, Major, you're beginning to sound like a Romulan.
We're on most of those things. Go check us out. On those things. You can also get us at www.itsgotstartrek.com.
That's why I'm going to build one.
I didn't know it. I felt like you were pausing for me and I panicked.
That's precisely what I was doing and precisely what happened. Okay.
That's funny, but I was playing stuff when you weren't pausing. Then when you finally like acquiesced and paused for me, I
agree. It's hilarious, Dan. email us feedback@itsgotstartrek.com.
Damn.
Subscribe to us on YouTube. Why not? And and by the way, next week we'll figure out what we're talking about next week. But then
I don't think so.
Following week, we can tell you it will be our discussion of Section 31, the TV movie, the Star Trek Section 31, which is going to be airing next week. So something else to look forward to. But otherwise, I think we'll call it even.
We'll call it even.
We'll call it even.
Good.
All right.
It's good.
We'll talk to you next week. Bye bye.
Hammock time.
Yo. You're not an in-between kind of guy.
What do you mean?
Well, people either love you or hate you.
Really?
I mean, I hated you when we first met.
I remember.
But now?
And now?
Well, now I don't.
It means a lot to me, Chief. It really does.